Legitimate Salvage, a podcast about The Expanse that is just 3 episodes away from completing our rewatch of seasons 1 through 3 before season 4 premieres on Amazon in December. Let's go around and introduce ourselves before we launch into the discussion of episodes 8 and 9 of the 3rd season, It Reaches Out and Intransigence.
I'm Jen Burt.
I'm Katie Burt.
And I'm Warren Fry.
Ever since you mentioned that you have trouble telling our voices apart on audio, I'm like, oh no.
I do. I still do.
I'm sure you're not the only one with that issue. One of us needs to adopt like a British accent or something.
Oh, I'm not doing that.
I'm not sure that's a good idea.
Yeah, it's a terrible idea. My accents are terrible, other than my natural accent.
Your Irish class, maybe you could get some tips there. You could take an Irish.
I could. I'm not learning. It's not Irish accent class.
I know. It's Gaelic
language class. He's taking a Gaelic class.
What kind of vaguely almost racist thing is an Irish accent class? It's at least offensive.
For actors.
Oh, I guess. All right. Dialect class.
No,
yeah,
I don't
that's
know.
The play way to say it.
It's actually taking a Gaelic class.
I am taking an Irish language class.
Okay.
But the thing I enjoy even more than my Irish language class is watching The Expanse and discussing it with all of you. So what did we think of these 2 episodes generally?
I think for 2 episodes where they're basically treading water, they do a pretty good job of treading water.
Yeah, there's definitely parts, I think, of the episodes that feel a little bit like they're treading water, but then there's mm-hmm. the moments where, like, things pick up and feel very frenetic, and I went back and rewatched a few scenes in these episodes because there was so much happening with, I think it was the scenes with, like, on the Behemoth, like, basically when they send that message from Holden that's not really Holden. Mm-hmm. And they're all fighting. There's some parts that really pick up. And, yeah.
There are some
and
parts
also,
that don't.
This is a build it back up episode, right? Like, they've already gone through all the big ring stuff and, you know, a squid turned into a gateway.
Yeah.
So how are you going to top that? You can't really. So this is more of us ramping it back up sort of a thing. Done through the interesting use of the whole documentary stuff, which I'm glad ends after 2 episodes.
Yeah.
It's fine
yeah.
to have, but it's nicer to have it end after 2 episodes.
Yeah. I really wanted to space those people, I think, as much as Amos did.
Especially the dude. I mean, the woman is objectively just as bad, if not worse, but I kind of want to space him more.
Yeah.
I guess he did more direct stuff.
Which her like attempts at like manipulating Holden, who's like clearly cracking, and she's just like, I have a degree in psychology. Just really made me dislike her.
She's not in on the spoilery stuff we're going to talk about later, is she? Like,
no,
she's just really committed to her documentary.
Yeah,
yeah. So she's a film jerk, not a jerk.
Exactly.
Not the best depiction of journalists.
No, not at all. I'd say more reality TV producer. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. As much as she claims to be a journalist, this mm-hmm. is more
yeah, well, that sounds
real
typical,
world
yes.
real world Rossi or something like yeah. that.
Yeah, I think generally gross. These I remember, like, looking back on this part of the story, I think it is one of the weaker parts in a very strong, like, 3 seasons. Mm-hmm. That is probably partially a result of them adapting the 3rd book in such a relatively short period of episode time from 7 to the end of the season. Which I think maybe they felt extra pressure to wrap things up because they weren't sure if they were going to get another season. I don't
that's
know if that's
a
true.
Good point. It's easy,
yeah.
To,
yeah.
it's easy to take for granted, and they didn't know at the time. So
yeah, which was a very valid concern. I think also I was lucky enough to visit the Expanse season 5 set this past week.
Oh,
and
wow. Okay, that,
so,
that is a bit of a...
So I was on set watching them film the 3rd episode of season 5 directed by Thomas Jane, which was very cool. He was wearing
well,
a hat.
Cool.
Yeah.
But also I had watched the first 6 screeners of season 4 in preparation for covering that. And then also I was watching these episodes. So I was kind of in 3 different parts of the story this past week.
I'd be so confused.
It was confusing. You know, a good confusion, but also, yeah, maybe made my viewing of these two episodes, while there were parts I really enjoyed, a little bit... The stakes maybe were diminished further because I was so aware of what was going to happen next in the story.
So you were like, this is like a meta spoiler. This is like actually a proto molecule level spoiler.
Yeah, I'm basically Holden.
Ooh, no.
No, I'm not. But before we get more into that analysis of whether I'm Holden or not, Jen says no. Let's dive into our clever episode synopses to ground our listeners.
So first we have It Reaches Out, which aired on May 30th, 2018. Mineo was slingshotting into the ring and is now the viral video of the week. The observation of the ring is unexpectedly over. He's gone in and now everyone's trying to figure out what that means. Anna's UNN Thomas Prince shipmates are busy making anti-Belter and anti-religious cracks. She thinks that if they can't all act less like fools, they probably shouldn't be there. Meanwhile, on the Behemoth, Nagata, Drummer, and Ashford are trying to out-cynic each other because they know the OPA will be blamed for the actions and never given any credit for anything they discover. Holden is called away from giving himself a mirror pep talk to view the footage, but really that's just a break in getting the protomolecules detective news. Meanwhile, Melba wakes up next to a pool of blood from the man she's murdered. She's shaken for a minute, but then manages to break Ren's body and stuff him behind some panels before setting up her bomb. She makes it back to her shuttle where the superhero uppers that she seems to be taking are fading. She nearly crashes the ship, but everyone thinks she's just a dumb rookie. Holden tries to convert space detective lingo into useful information about the ring while running all of the scans to figure out if he is infected with the protomolecule or he's just lost his mind. Amos reassures him, but also double checks the logs and tells Alex that they better figure out things fast. Meanwhile, on the Thomas Prince, Anna tries to comfort a clearly distressed Melba, but is rejected. Probably because Melba has to use her detonator app to blow up the Sinyun. And on the Rossi, Cohen is on his own sabotage mission, planting a fake OPA communique from Holden that is transmitted immediately after the blast. The Rossi has no comms and a captain that is murmuring to a ghost. The Thomas Prince threatens to fire on the Rossi in 1 minute. Ashford points out that the OPA must fire to disavow the message, and Naomi points out that they are being played. But Captain Drummer makes the order to fire on the Rossi. The only way out is to listen to what Holden has made of Miller's mumbo jumbo and flip and burn until right before they enter the ring, real slow.
Intransigence aired on June 6, 2018. Everyone's freaking out now that the Rossi has gone through the ring gate, especially Naomi, who is afraid that her Rossi family just died at the hands of her Behemoth family. Meanwhile, the Rossi is in some kind of bubble on the other side of the ring, trying to figure out A, what the heck just happened, and B, how to convince all the people with the big guns on the other side of the ring that Holden isn't an OPA terrorist. That's going to be hard without the comms, though, which have been sabotaged. Amos quickly points the finger at Cohen, who admits he may have tampered with the ship's comms, but it was for art. Yeah, okay, great. With Holden off trying to make contact with Proto Miller, Amos makes an executive decision. He's going to get their message back to the fleet the old-fashioned way by gently forcing Monica and Cohen off the ship in the general direction of the MCRN ship that's tailing them. Problem solved. They can tell the Martians in person. Eventually, Holden gets through to Proto Miller, who gives him his next piece of bonkers advice. Head over to the ring's nucleus. Holden puts on a spacesuit and gets ready for his trip. On the Behemoth, Melba is feeling kind of sort of bad about having murdered Ren, which triggers some flashbacks to her time being Jules Pierre Mao's less cool daughter during fancy dinner parties. That's right, folks. Melba is Mao's daughter and other Mao's sister. Turns out she's been doing this all just to get back at Holden for that time he citizen arrested her mass murderer father. And she's not done yet. While she may have framed Holden as a terrorist, she's going to make sure she finishes the jobs. When Avasarala orders all civilians to evacuate the ring space, contractor Melba signs on for the extra hazard pay and for another opportunity to murder. Who else is sticking around? Our friend Pastor Anna, who is all about this ring business. Belters are all about this ring business, too. The Behemoth goes through the ring, and Naomi takes the opportunity to defect. She wants to head back to the Rossi. Drummer lets Naomi go, even if she doesn't understand it.
Wow.
That's a lot.
It's so much happening.
It seems like more than I actually watched.
Well, we get the next, we really dive into the next incarnation of the protomolecule arc in these episodes with the investigator, also known as Proto Miller. So, you know, it's a lot easier to talk about scope of story now that we're almost to the end of season three. Looking back and seeing what, or seeing this, and you know, the investigator, and looking back on where we've come from, what's your favorite phase of the protomolecule story so far? Do you like the blue space goo, the proto people, or the proto Miller?
I would probably kill proto Miller if I could. And not because, like, I actually like this incarnation of Miller, or like the use of Thomas Jane, but if I had to interpret, like, techno detective babble to survive,
I would lose it.
It's like, in like, at one point I was watching these episodes and I was like, should I try to see like what he's saying makes any sense to be able to talk about in the podcast? And I'm like, yeah, okay, whatever. You're supposed to look at the room. Yeah, go slow. Okay, what? Like, I didn't care. I liked the space goo. I liked
I liked the creatures, because when you get creatures, you got Bobby kicking creatures' asses. So I'm all for that.
I like the idea of not only Jen being annoyed by the investigators, like, way of describing things, but also the protomolecule being like, okay, we're like, you know, we're using the memories in some way of this person and the language and his, like, experience to explain things to this person he knows. And then they're like, oh, all of his examples are these, like,
bad detective
stupid
novels,
cases
yeah.
he's been on. Like, how frustrated must the protomolecule be?
it is kind of irritating, but I see why, because they have to do something with the protomolecule and they have to find a way for it to reach out. And that makes the most story sense.
Yeah.
And I do like where they kind of nod and a wink, where the protomolecule just goes into this giant scientific explanation of quantum, whatever the hell. And then, but it's done a little too ha-ha audience. You know what I mean? Like, I get it, but would the protomolecule have that sort of self-awareness? Like, it's a super intelligence, but why would it bother, you know, showing him up, showing Holden up? That's my main thing with it. But I get why it's here, and it gets better further episodes down the road, too.
I like this more this time as well, because I think I liked Miller more this time watching. So I was just excited to have Thomas Jane back and to have that character back. I do think that it feels like Holden gets very stressed very quickly, which makes sense, but it does feel like things escalate very quickly for him in terms of, you know, him seeming like he might be insane, and, you know, he even thinks that he might be insane. Do you guys feel that way?
Yeah, totally. It's a real left turn. It kind of doesn't, it feels a little off that all of a sudden he's talking to ghosts and being crazy, you know? Like, although you could argue that reality TV drove him to it, so.
I mean, it's some place, but, like, one of my notes for this episode, or the first episode, when he's like, I'm a little tired, I'm a little tapped out, and I just wrote, very relatable.
Like, true, yes.
Like, he's trying to give himself this pep talk, and you're like, he has been through a lot. And, like, everyone has a breaking point, and it's not always clear where that breaking point is.
Like, it's surprising he hasn't, like, started seeing
things. Narratively, there's not a lot of lead up to this. He goes from, like, being a perfectly fine captain of this small ship to hallucinating, seemingly.
Yeah, it's quick.
There isn't a lot of, like, foreshadowing. Yeah, it just... But sometimes that's how people lose it.
That's true, yeah.
I also think this works better for me than when Holden's obsession with the hybrid in season two.
Yeah, even though that's more drawn
happens,
out and developed.
Yeah.
This makes a little more sense given.
I think because we actually see Miller, and we're just as confused maybe as Holden is about what's happening.
I was thinking about this today, and this will only make sense if A, you're old, and B, probably from Canada. But we used to run on the local channel the old 60s Spider-Man. And the first two seasons of 60s Spider-Man are just straightforward comic book nonsense. And then the third season just goes completely psychedelic and wackadoodle. And that's kind of what this feels like, that we've entered the wackadoodle Spider-Man phase. Because there's all this up is down, left is right. You have to go slow through the ring for some reason that nobody thought of doing beforehand.
It does feel like, up to this point, I mean, the laws of things, well, the protomolecule bends the rules of physics. Yeah. This is the first point that, like, a character that we really know is affected by that in a really intense way, I think.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
Because it does feel nuts.
Yeah, because even someone like Katoa,
yeah,
we knew him kind of, but he's not, I mean, he's far from a main character. Obviously, the protomolecule infected him in a very different way, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
I think you're right. Well, while our friendship is not with us this week to discuss The Expanse, he did contribute some suggestions to the show notes, including one of my favorite bullet points in all of our show notes ever, which just says, the investigator equals Mr. Snuffleupagus. Snuffleupagus? I was like, also like, is it Snuffleupagus? Snuffleupagus.
I think it's Snuffleupagus. And this used to drive me crazy as a kid. I would yell at the TV saying, you idiots, he's right there.
Yeah.
Just can look over explain, that way.
Can someone explain this to me?
Katie's confused about how Sesame Street works. Sometimes, like, we were there watching it together.
Don't think I remember. Because
every time, like, Big Bird's always talking to Mr. Snuffleupagus, and then he, like, walks off screen, and then everyone's like, we don't know.
Yeah,
giant
and they changed that because
so everyone's like gaslighting him, or does he not exist?
Yeah, it was traumatizing children, so that's why they changed it. Because I turned it on one day when I was, I don't know, let's say 18, and all of a sudden the kids are just hanging out with Snuffleupagus. I'm like, I put up with all that crap for this? What is this nonsense? Oh man,
is this like a generational thing where like
yeah, at a certain is. Point
he's revealed as being real?
But you're right, I was there with you. Also, did Chip bring this up on a previous podcast?
I don't think so.
I don't think he has, no.
That much about Sesame Street.
Well, maybe someone else was talking about this recently. Okay. I'm not sure if I... Okay. This is making me think that Sesame Street was a lot more sinister than I remember.
Well, they did kill off Mr. Hooper because he died in real life. Well,
I don't know what it says about The Expanse, though.
Not much.
Well, yeah. It's like, is Miller there?
I mean, I think what it says about The Expanse is that they're using a storyline structure that has been around for a while and can be used in lots of different kinds of programming.
And even children can understand the concept of, is this imaginary or is this not?
Yes. I mean, that's probably hard. Okay, we don't need to go too far into Sesame Street.
No, we don't.
I'm going to cut that off right there. We also have this other note from Chip, which is that he points out that we get this mistaken identity, victim of a hoax, no one believes me plot in this episode with Holden being framed. Personally, Chip is not a fan of this kind of plot structure. How do you guys feel about it?
I mean, you got to have him talk to the protomolecule somehow.
Yeah. And
this is as good a play away as any. Who else is he going to talk to, really?
Yeah. Well, I think he's talking more about...
to, like, communique?
Oh,
yeah, sort of, I think. But you're right.
Believing him on the ship.
It is related to him having an imaginary friend.
I totally get where Chip's coming from. But at the same time, if I was on that ship, I'd be like, what's going on?
It's so interesting to watch Alex and Amos try to work through this.
Mm-hmm.
While also being, like, in a small space with these two people they don't trust. To be like, we kind of trust Holden, but also...
We're worried about
Holden. We're really
Holden.
Worried about him.
I like that when you... This plot... I guess I don't feel... I am okay with this kind of plot structure. I think it can be really fun. I think that it feels a little... Like, again, rushed or, like, gimmicky in a way that The Expanse doesn't usually... doesn't usually do.
Wait, which is, like, Miller or, like, the communique?
Yeah, I guess I'm thinking more about not so much what Holden believes or sees, but the framing. And maybe this is something we should talk more about in the spoiler space. I'm realizing as I just go to make my point. So I'm going to actually put a pin in this and come back, because the point I'm about to make, I think, has a little bit too much information that happens after this episode. Mm-hmm. But I do think that regardless of how you feel about the plot structure, removing Holden as, like, you know, I guess the stable leader, rational character, mm-hmm. who usually makes the decisions, especially with Naomi gone, does create this, like, vacuum for that. And I am really interested in the decision that the story makes to put Amos in that role. Because it really mm-hmm. isn't Alex who's making the decisions here. And
no,
it,
he's killed yeah. him, but that's about it.
Yeah.
And it makes Amos, like, we know Amos is a steady character, but he also has been depicted in the past in certain contexts as, I guess, unpredictable, which he still is here, but those two things are not necessarily at odds. He's both steady and unpredictable at the same time.
I have to say my favorite, absolute favorite part of this whole thing is where he gets hit on by both members of the crew, of the documentary crew, and just shoots him down in the most quiet and steady way possible.
Like, yeah, it's never that, like, he treats them equally. He's like,
yeah,
man or woman or whatever, it doesn't matter. I'm yeah. not interested no, for thank the same you. Reason. Yeah, I really
do. I have a shot? It just quietly, you don't.
Yeah,
that was hilarious.
Yeah, it's very small in a really amazing way, I think.
Mm-hmm.
With the documentary crew, we also get the documentary style that it reaches out, utilizes in some very climactic parts. I'm thinking specifically the two shots that stand out to me are the one of Amos and Alex, like, whisper discussing Holden's mm-hmm. potential insanity. But then also Holden and Amos talking through the
airlock
door, which is, I think, a really beautiful scene in a relationship that doesn't always get a huge amount of focus, but has been slowly built from the beginning of the show and has evolved a lot from the beginning of the show. And I was curious how you both felt about, or if you had thought about, that choice to film it in that way and if it worked for you or not.
Half and half. At the climactic bits, it does work because it's a different way to look at it, but it's been used so much by so many things, like Parks mm-hmm. and Rec, for instance, or whatever, that a little goes a long way. I mean, it's interesting that they're doing that, because it's The Expanse and you don't expect it. But again, I'm glad they cut it off after two episodes, or really one, more or less.
The parts where they try to make the people who are part of the documentary crew characters
mm-hmm.
don't work for me. Like when
yeah.
she's trying to convince Holden to, like, confide in her, I'm just like, I hate this storyline.
Mm-hmm.
But the filming of, like, they hold in it. Amos conversation feels really well done.
Mm-hmm. If those little probes were zipping around, I would be punching them too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think for me, the Amos-Alex conversation works a little bit better for me with that style, because I felt like there are potential consequences to Cohen or Monica finding out that Holden was potentially insane. But for the Amos-Holden conversation, I think because so much was going on at that moment, I didn't even think, like, mm-hmm. they would have time to process that information, or yeah, it didn't feel as, the stakes didn't feel so high in terms of, like, what if the documentary crew finds out about this.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wanted, that scene's so beautifully acted, I wanted a different kind of visual language, but mm-hmm. it was, you know, it was still great. There was so much going on that I liked about the scene that it worked. I just am curious how it would have worked with a different visual style.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we can speculate on all day. That's what they did. So there's nothing we can do about it.
Yeah, that is the scene where Amos really seems like the most worried he's ever seemed.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, makes sense. They have, like, no comms at that point. They're probably going to get shot at by multiple factions.
They're in a totally foreign environment that they have no idea how...
Yeah, where physics doesn't behave. Work.
Yeah, but then, yeah, and then, he, like, here's Holden being like, just trust me, it's all good.
Yeah.
I've been talking about ghosts, so everything's fine.
It's fine, I've been talking... But, like, yeah, West Chatham really sells that scene of, like, I don't want to necessarily know that I should trust you, but I'm gonna trust you in this moment.
Yeah. Yep.
There's so many good Alex moments in this, in these episodes too. Like, I'm thinking of when he scolds Amos for having looked up his like medical logs, and he's like, but what did they say?
That was good. Yes.
And also when he's just hovering outside Holden's door, like trying to like hype himself up, or like, and or like check on Holden and see if he's like okay. Yeah, we've talked before about how domestic Alex or is one of our favorite Alex's, perhaps, or one of his strengths is being, like being the nurturer of the crew, maybe. And I think that was a great moment for that.
Even though he's also a psychotic dude. So that's weird.
Oh, no, I was talking about Alex.
Oh, yes, of course.
I was like, whoa, Warren.
Yeah, no, Alex is not a psychotic dude, except when he's in his piloting. Then he gets really psychotic.
It's also like, when you have just the three of them together, I mean, I know the documentary crew is here, but they don't really play into it as much of like, because there's a lot of scenes of just the three of them talking. And they're just like, we don't know how to run the ship without Naomi. Like, how do you not know how your comm systems work? I don't know.
Yeah, you really feel her absence in this episode. And We would care about the Rossi and the fate of the Rossi even if Naomi wasn't on the behemoth watching this terrible, horrific situation for her play out. But the fact that she's there and separated from her family and she's not on their side in the way that she usually is, she's not able to be a resource for her family the way that she usually is, does add so much dimension to this situation. I think some of my favorite parts of these two episodes were the scenes with her and Ashford and Drummer, because you also totally understand where they're coming from. What was it like for you guys watching the three of them kind of just play off each other and get little
aslides? Good.
Yeah.
I mean, David Strathairn is always fun to watch. Like, the guy's a great actor. And the other two are no small shakes either. Now, you have in the notes, Naomi Allegiance's channel, when Drummer, whom she loves, fires in the Rossi, fellow other people she loves. I'm like, is that you shipping or is that really on screen? Because I don't, like, I'm all for it, don't get me wrong, but I don't see it on screen.
Naomi literally says to Drummer, and Katie wrote these notes, but partially influenced by me. Naomi says to Drummer when she's leaving, I love you. And you're like,
okay, well then, fair enough.
I maybe when we're watching it, Katie, I was like, Katie, get ready for this very shippy scene.
Which, Jen did say that.
I'm.
I didn't even notice, but that doesn't mean it didn't happen. It means I didn't notice, so.
Yeah.
Doesn't she also say something like, I left the Rossi for the wrong reasons?
Yes.
And Drummer says,
I'm the wrong reason.
Yeah.
All right. Well, basically, I'm clueless is what I'm trying to say here.
No, I mean, there's different ways to interpret this scene.
There's a lot happening in this episode. Yeah. So, like, who Naomi's love interest is, which seems
or
like she
interest.
Has several, exactly.
Well, it's the future. They probably can have several.
Yeah.
So, also possible in the present.
True. Also true, yes. But more socially acceptable in the future.
Yes,
though,
so. Yes. In theory, although I don't think have we really seen that in the show? Well, I guess
with
Holden's family is like,
something's going on.
It's very.
Yeah, and like I said, with the dating thing, almost everybody's pan, right? So,
So
I think it's just kind of acknowledged that things are just different and more, I don't know if poly's quite the right word, but it more or less that.
Future. And like in general, this show isn't super interested in exploring that part of the world. So it doesn't feel so much, it doesn't feel like an omission. It doesn't feel like.
It just feels like background.
Yeah.
You decide what you're reading into it.
Yeah.
I am, you know, reading into Naomi and Drummer.
Yeah.
You know, they've had some good times, I think, while they're getting the behemoth
probably
up and running.
Yeah,
maybe.
Didn't
cause a whole hullabaloo with this question. I'm just curious.
No, I think it's a cool thing to discuss, and I think maybe one of the things that was sadly we missed out on seeing more of, like, just the relationship, however it is defined, by having this book adapted so quickly. I don't know if there is anything in the book, or, like, how much the relationship is explored in the book. Regardless, you can also adapt things in however, you know, whichever way you choose. And again,
or it could be it's more in the story in the TV show than is the book. They could very well be taken in their own direction.
Well, because Drummer is like an amalgamation of like several characters.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, true.
Because they basically were like, we really like Karagi. How can we keep her around? From what I understand, and so like, they kind of rolled a couple characters into.
Well, they're doing a great job. Mm-hmm. And I did love the scene between Naomi and Ashford, where he is seemingly trying to convince her to stay, but then maybe inadvertently convinces her to leave.
Yeah, the scene where I wrote down, he just blathers about nostalgia.
Yeah.
He does some very high quality blathering.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's good blathering, but
he's too convincing.
Yeah. I mean, he's trying to appeal to her identity as a Belter, an OPA member. But he inadvertently makes her realize she wants to be with everyone on the Rossi. Although I think the, like, big Drummer, let's hype everyone up for our Belter Nation who are fearless speech... Also, I think it's a combination of Ashford and Drummer convincing her that she doesn't need to be there. She needs to be somewhere else.
Yeah, that's a powerful scene. And it's powerful to watch Naomi not participate in the way that everyone else is, at least. Mm-hmm. So, elsewhere, we spend a lot of time with the character of Melba, who we... find out in these episodes is in fact a member of the Mao family, which seems like, you know, from the outside you're like, good deal, like very privileged, get to, you know, anything you could possibly want, but the more you learn about this family, the more terrible it seems to be a part of it. Now that we do get those flashbacks and we learn more about Melba's character and motivation, do you feel any more sympathy for her in these episodes than you did before?
I mean, she mashed that guy's head in, so not really. Like, that was brutal, man. That's way worse than anything Julie ever did.
Yeah. I think that show really tries to sell us on like her having these flashbacks and maybe feeling guilty or traumatized by that. But like, that is a brutal scene where she mashes... Yeah,
And he's nice to her, and she just,
Also, like, the fact that she's on this vendetta for her father, who not only is a terrible person on the, like...
And dad,
like, entire solar system sense, seems not to be a great father to her. Mm-hmm. Or Julie, from the flashbacks we see.
I mean, who knows how that family is. Maybe, like, sometimes... Here's another Canadian example. Rob Ford, the now deceased ex-mayor of Toronto, just wanted to please his dad when you get right down to it, and that caused a whole manner of problems for him. So maybe she's kind of in that same boat. She just never was going to get that approval and yet did all this stuff and got more. You know what I mean? This is my dad's psychology version.
I knew that he passed away until
I didn't either. Said...
Oh, no, well, he did. He did a couple years ago.
Thanks
cancer, I think.
I was supposed to.
So on top of all the embarrassing stuff he did and the problems he was dealing with, he then passed away. And now his jackass brother, who I took pictures of the other day at a conference, is the Premier of Ontario.
I knew that. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Huh. This is an interesting, like, parallel.
I mean, this is the only time you're going to hear a Rob Ford / Melba Mao.
Yeah, I'm glad you're bringing the Canadian perspective, Warren.
It's very important, yes.
There's always weird political families.
Yeah, I mean...
Who have...
Before we go too far down that road, I agree with both of you. The more we learn about Melba, I think the less sympathetic she becomes. I think when you're watching her in the episode where she actually kills Ren and plants a bomb, you at least have some... I don't know. Like, I don't know what a good reason would be for those things, but... this isn't it for sure.
she actually blew up a ship. Like, what the hell?
Yeah, which they don't really dive into too far because, you know, when there's that mention from one of the other contracted workers that they just think that the man she killed was on the ship, which is technically true. Mm-hmm. You know, presumably maybe there weren't other people on the ship, but maybe there were.
There probably were.
Yeah.
Well, the Maos haven't really shown they care. except maybe Julie, and even then.
I know.
The flashbacks of Julie are not particularly
great
for her either.
That's an effed up family is what that is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Makes me appreciate my sister.
I did find it interesting because I was like, this is a way we could save money. Here's a mansion that we could shoot in and some trees we could shoot in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. I was trying to decide if it would have been more effective if we saw various points of their relationship or family, like, in time. Mm-hmm. But you know what else that would have been? More expensive.
Yeah, that's true.
And I don't know if it would have made a difference because, like we've all mentioned, I mean, Melva's doing some pretty terrible things. And not only is, like, the thing she's certainly trying to do, i.e. murder Holden or make him suffer or whatever and kill people in the process, she also just doesn't care what kind of collateral damage she does, which is maybe even, maybe not worse, but it's also bad. Like, they wouldn't have gone into the ring, probably, if not for her. You know, she set into motion the series of events. And who knows how that's going to work out. But she certainly didn't. And, you know, that could have ended up with a lot of people dying immediately, or things could have gotten a lot worse very quickly.
Well, she doesn't know when she sends up that fake, because she's presumably communicating with Cohen, right? That set this whole plan in motion. She doesn't know. Like, the OPA could start. Like, they choose to side against the Rossi.
Mm-hmm.
But that could have...
They could totally defend the Rossi.
Totally have defended the Rossi, or not even had the chance to defend the Rossi, because the UN and then... The UN... Whatever. Yeah. There's so many N's in that UN. UNN.
she reminds me of that... I can't remember her name, but the rich person who's making friends with Pastor Anna, who looks like kind of like Soledad O'Brien, the old CNN anchor.
She does look like... Oh, yeah.
And in that they're both super privileged rich people who just kind of do what they want, and who cares who gets in the way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, totally.
Speaking of Pastor Anna, do you think it reveals anything new about her character that she chooses to stay on the Thomas Prince?
No, I think it's on point, though. It's exactly the kind of thing you expect her to do. And her poor, long-suffering wife, who just is like, what the hell is this?
That is the only thing that, like, she's so good at, like, trying to help other people. And, like, then she's trying to send this communique back to her wife. And she just totally can't do it. Which, you know, in some ways makes sense. Like,
because she's making kind of like Alex. You know what I mean? Like, she's bad at being a family person.
Yeah.
Yeah, she prioritizes other things. And it is interesting where she has the conversation with the rich socialite woman, that, you know, she's just kind of trying to figure out what her motivation is. And she talks about the desire to be there for a miracle, which is true, but also, as, you know, just keep calling her the socialite, points out, you know, is a bit of a spin on, I want to be part of this thing that's important, which isn't necessarily selfish, but Pastor Anna just has a way with words that makes everything sound like exactly
just
the right
really
thing.
She's really reassuring.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even religious and I'm reassured.
Oh, yeah.
Do you all think that you would stay on the Thomas Prince, given the choice?
I mean, I'd like to think so, but I'm also probably in real life a bit of a wuss, so maybe not.
I'm in the same boat. I always think that I would do that, but really, they probably wouldn't let me into space in the first place.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. Nobody's going to bring me up there. Like, I'd be one of those guys who's like, I applied to be a doctor 30 years ago. Here I am on the street.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm almost certain I would not stay on the Thomas Prince or even find myself in that situation. I know it's a different situation, but when Jen and I went to see Gravity in IMAX, I was like, it finished, and literally the first thing I said to Jen was like, I already knew I didn't want to go to space, but now I just am positive I never want to go to space. Unless it's like a Star Trek, you know, Next Generation situation.
We've really figured things out.
Yeah, like
out.
The hotel in space, yeah.
Exactly. So yeah, not gonna stay on the Thomas Prince for whatever might happen next. Getting off with that priest guy.
or
the heading to Titan.
Seems reasonable.
All right.
Okay, we are now entering the spoiler zone. For those who haven't watched past episode 9 of season 3 and do not wish to be spoiled for the rest of season 3, it's time to head to Titan. We hope you'll come back next week for our discussion of episodes 10 and 11, Dandelion Sky and Fallen World. You can subscribe wherever good podcasts are found and follow us at Legit Salvage on Twitter. For everyone else, let's dive in. So we didn't actually get a chance to discuss this before the spoiler break, but we have Holden choosing to trust Miller, especially, you know, at the end of this episode. Actually, a few times. He chooses to trust Miller when they don't have a lot of options, so it maybe is an easier choice to head towards the ring gate. But then at the end, Miller's like, yeah, you need to just, like, get in a spacesuit and fly off to the nucleus. And Holden's like, yeah, okay. How do you feel about this? Like, do you think Holden should trust Miller now and moving forward? And
how I mean, much we know of, that, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and how much of Miller do you think, or how much of the investigator is Miller? How much of Miller?
Oh, very little. I think it's a shell and like a template. It's basically it's a Gmail skin is what it is of the actual the protomolecule would sort of communicate through the monsters too, like the work is done, that kind of stuff. So
yeah.
So it's just another way for it to communicate, basically.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. I think. I remember the first time I saw him going off in a spacesuit, and I was like, this is so stupid. Why would you do that? Like, no!
Yeah, forget about staying on the Thomas Prince.
Like, oh. And I understand he's really cracked, I think, at this point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which, fine. You know, he's gone through all of this, and now he's seeing this hallucination of his dead friend.
Kind of friend.
Yeah, associate.
Associate.
Colleague.
Yeah.
But, like...
Chum.
That, like, and to not consult anyone around you and just be like, oh, I think, like, you know what? This is what I think we need. Like, he has this moment where he's like, Miller says we should do this. And then he's like, and also, Miller tells me to fly off into space to the center of this weird zone we're in. I'm not going to tell anyone. I'm just going to do it.
Yeah.
Bad.
It doesn't ring all that true. You know what I mean? Comparatively speaking.
Yeah. It isolates. It does end up isolating him so much.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it does kind of work out because he has these people who on the behemoth who end up between the behemoth and Bobby coming, it works out. But it really could have gone.
Yeah, right now a lot of people think he's a terrorist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now he's
most
just.
Most people think that.
Yeah, yeah, most people, for legitimate reasons, think he's a terrorist. And he's not, you know, even telling his closest allies what's going on and just taking off towards this thing that no one understands and therefore is understandably afraid of.
Because say someone boards the Rossi while he's gone. Alex and Amos being like, I don't know, he went off on his own and we didn't have anything to do with it.
He's actually out for lunch. He'll be back soon.
It's not a real convincing argument. Everyone is going to be like, no, your captain sent this communique. Where is he?
Yeah, and he ends up getting like this massive amount of information in his head for his trouble.
It works out, kind of.
Yeah.
But he doesn't know that at this moment.
No. He does not. I don't know if it's worth discussing this further in the spoiler section, but looking ahead to the final episodes in season 3, which will continue to adapt Abaddon's Gate.
Mm-hmm. I have a hard time keeping track of which book is which.
Yeah, I guess is there anything more to be said about that idea that, you know, we've seen the first book, I think, took like a season and a half to adapt.
I think so, yeah.
And obviously they haven't totally kept that pace, but this is a really, it's kind of impressive, actually, how much they get into 7 episodes.
Is that how much we have left? No. Really?
No, that's, it started on episode 7.
Right, okay, yes, yes.
Yeah,
so, yeah. Goes 3 of 13. These episodes that we've watched. 3 of podcast.
Yeah.
And there's 4 more that we haven't discussed
before
yet.
Before season 4 drops, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm curious to watch this again, like, to finish out this arc, because, like, I think I maybe said this before, this has... It was always kind of... time jumps are hard for me as a viewer in any TV show. And I feel like it feels like a slight betrayal of, like, the code between storyteller and viewer, which is not true. But, you know, you change the pace of the adaptation. I'm like, no, we're supposed to see these things happening. We're supposed to see the changes in time at this certain pace. So this has always felt like... It was a hard transition for me from... you know, the buildup over 2.5 seasons that was so satisfying to a reset, which is still building on what has come before, which I think is even clearer this time I'm watching. But yeah, I'm now that I've had some time to get over that betrayal, necessary betrayal. Yeah, I'm excited to see how the rest of this plays out, especially looking forward to season 4.
From what little we've seen of it, the trailer, which is basically a giant weird space structure that has protomolecule in it that somehow is not hurting people. I don't know how.
Yeah.
Yeah, what'd you guys think of the latest season 4 trailer that just came out?
It's pretty cool. Yeah. It's a lot of mayhem.
It's a lot of mayhem. A lot of familiar faces.
I mean, everything that on this new Terra, right? With, like, a confusion again... about whatever, protomolecule or this planet. That seems exciting.
Yeah, a new frontier.
Yeah.
I just don't want it to bog down, like... I mean, I liked season, I guess it was 3 of Battlestar Galactica, where they were on New Caprica and they were under occupation, but it did take a little too long to resolve. Having said that, the resolution is one of the best scenes in TV history where the Galactica comes to the atmosphere. Oh. I actually stood up in my chair and cheered when I saw that. And I don't do that.
Oh, that, yeah.
I agree, though. I'm getting very intense New Caprica vibes.
Well, there's that same... From what I can tell of the trailer, there's that same... These belters are trying to create a new world in the same way that you have in... the New Caprica storyline.
Yeah, and it's just as gray as New Caprica. These new worlds are always complete dumps.
Yeah. It's, yeah. Oh, man.
I think they actually filmed in a quarry.
Maybe the same...
Classic Doctor Who.
Exactly. Like, if they're any sort of proper production team, they filmed in a quarry.
And I did... I am excited about some of the people who are going to be on the show. Like, obviously, Bryn Gorman from Torchwood.
And nothing else.
Yes.
No, just Torchwood.
Nothing else. Just Torchwood. I mean, that scene with him and Amos in the trailer where he's like, I don't even remember what the line is.
He's like, one of these days.
We're going to like, we're fight, basically. Yeah. And Amos is like, I'm free now.
Classic Amos.
Yeah. Like, that I think is going to be an interesting character dynamic based on the trailer. I'm also excited to see Lindy Greenwood, who is... in Sleepy Hollow, which was a show that I enjoyed for 2 seasons, and then the show kind of imploded on itself. But she
I remember that being a thing on social media, yeah.
Yes, it really did. But she was great on it throughout, so I don't even know much about... This is one of those moments where I'm like, do I want to find out about the character that she plays by reading about the books? No, I'm not going to do it. But I am excited that she... seems to be hanging out with the Rossi crew.
I will say, I know I've told Jen this. I don't know if I mentioned it to you, Warren, but I definitely haven't mentioned it to you listeners, which is that while I was on the set, I basically decided that I'm going to start reading the books after season 4 drops.
Well, probably I started I found out I had the first one on my Kindle and forgot about it. So yeah. I've heard about the first two chapters again. And they mention the Epstein drive right off the top. And they say that guy is like still going in space. It just doesn't stop. So I mean, I don't understand why they spent all that time explaining that. It didn't really need to be. And like, I guess it adds flavor or something. But it doesn't really need to be there. I don't need to be told how this drive works. I just know it does.
Maybe we can all read the books and then live tweet our experiences on the Legit Salvage Twitter.
Ooh. Sounds very laborious.
And we'll all do it simultaneously, and we'll all be in different places, and it will be chaos.
I think it's a terrible idea, I gotta tell you.
Yeah, that sounds... Because I'm in a similar boat as Warren. I got through part of the first book. It's still on my Kindle. I lost the aim.
Yeah, it's just not bad. It's just there's a lot of it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we'll keep you updated on that. Does anyone have anything else to mention in the spoiler section?
No, I think that pretty much covers it. I think the big spoilers are coming up in the next couple episodes here, four anyway. Mm-hmm.
As expected, the closer we get to the season 3 finale, season 4 premiere, the less we have to say in this section.
Oh, totally, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us on A Legitimate Salvage. We'll be back next week to discuss Dandelion Sky and Fallen World. Until then, go into a room too fast, kid. The room eats you.